Why don't you just begin by telling me how your school got to the point of being threatened with closure?
Yeah, I think it really started when I was a student. So this is going to show demonstrate the long history of consolidation effort for my experience. So I grew up here in Helvetia, which is served by Pickens School, and I was a student from around 89 to 2000 at Pickens School. And in 1990, roughly, a closure effort was made by the county to close our school, along with some others that actually did close at that time. And the reason for the closure effort was, again, financial, and they didn't argue too much about our size, even though we were only about 45 students at that time, and now we're only 30. So it was really a financial complaint again. The way we won and didn't get closed that time was we actually were voted for closure by the Board of Education. Our local county Board of Education voted for closure. It went to the state. The state deemed it illegal due to the bus route. And they said that the bus route was too long and too dangerous for our children per code. And they then made what they called the educational allowance, which gave our school and a few others throughout the state an earmark of roughly $150,000 to subsidize our school for our county. And that was state-funded money. And they said, you must keep Pickens School open. Here's some money to help subsidize them. So I got to graduate from there in 2000, as well as a couple hundred other kids since then. And really, the newest closure proceedings, we sensed them coming about 2 years, maybe a year before.
I'd say at least
Two
two,
years?
three, because if you remember, we started getting involved, just us.
Yeah.
And then the second year, we were like burning out. And then the LSIC said, all right, let's do next
Yeah.
year. We'll all
So
come
we.
together.
Our school is only 30 students and has been for about 5 years that size. It's K through 12. It's a public school. And in, I would say, early 2022, we got the sense from the superintendent that there was a financial problem. The COVID monies were beginning to re redu re be exhausted. They had been used for other things. Some of those things they spent the money on were questionable. In fact, a neighboring county got sued and taken over by the state for misuse of those COVID dollars. And so we were just getting a, there was like almost a feeling of this inevitability, which was we had lap of luxury with COVID money, and then suddenly now we're having trouble, and the kids are have more needs because of those COVID times and due to economic pressures. So in 2022, we had a community meeting where we mentioned it.
2023. Oh no, we did mention
Yeah,
2023, correct.
2022, we mentioned it as at our town meeting, which these are really small. This is like a town meeting of 25 people, and we just do this annually, and we kind of report on what concerns we have for our community. And we brought it up and said, hey, we need to start looking at the school. We have concerns closure proceedings could come back. And so that was one. And then the next summer, we actually coordinated with our local school improvement council and had a private meeting in the summer of 2023. Three, and said, "Hey, I had contacted you, Mara, and was kind of like at a loss, like, what do I do?" And had researched your website and kind of printed off lots of documentation from your research to say, "We got to get this now. We need to start taking action and actually coordinating a strategy together before the superintendent comes and says, I want to make sure I close your school."
Well, and I think it's worth mentioning that you and I were doing stuff on our own. We met with the superintendent on our own. We kind of wrote letters. We started taking action, but it was just us. And by that point, we were feeling
Exhausted.
overwhelmed and exhausted.
And we weren't making
And
much traction. We tried to ask for budget information. They wouldn't give
didn't
it
get
to
it.
us. We went to RIF hearings, reduction in force hearings, and tried to fight for saving several positions. That didn't work. So we needed an entity like a local school improvement council, which is a statewide for us, a mandated council, kind of like your old
parent-teacher
parent
organ,
teach
yeah.
yeah parent-teacher organization. This one is has rights, it has bylaws, so that was really brilliant of some of our community members to leverage that as an entity that could go up against and ask and request for very specific information. What else would we, after 23, when we had that private meeting, that we got the closure, we got the clo sense that the closure was coming, or the superintendent was going to make the proposal, because he verbally told us
Private
a
meeting.
private meeting
Yeah,
again.
we did like we preemptively contacted the new superintendent and said, "Hey, come visit our school. Let's come to our community so you can see it." And he said yes, and he came. And then at that meeting said, "I'm glad that you offered this because I'm considering consolidation and trying to meet with all of the places that will be part of that." And that's where he gave us that indication that this will be a more, a for sure conversation at the Board of Education level rather than just sort of hearsay.
And he was already, oddly enough, pushing the charter school model to us at that meeting. He was suggesting, "I'm closing you guys. We can't afford you. And I think you would be a great candidate for charter school." And so we immediately questioned that, and then we brought up to him right away in that meeting, "Well, you do realize that this proceeding they've just tried to do this before. We live a very far distance from the closest public school. And the distance would be illegal per code." And
How long would it
he
be on the bus?
it would be a so it'd be a 2 hour, well, 1 hour and 45-minute bus ride one way, I believe. So you'd expect about 3.5 hours on the bus, close to 4 hours on the bus. And this includes elementary students. So high school students have a l bigger range of when they can be on a, how long they can be on a bus, whereas K through, I believe, five cannot have has a shorter distance. And we still are not meeting that. With our distance, we would not be meeting that. And so ours should be deemed illegal.
Can I just point out one thing that seems notable here is that you were very aware of what the state statute was, and
Yes.
that such a long bus ride would be in violation of state code. How
Yeah.
did you know that?
Okay, that was because of the hearings from when I was a child, and my father had done an analysis of the bus route based on the distance and comparing it to code, along with a few other like leaders, volunteer leaders at that time in the 90s, and they had that code already pulled up from the last time. It was almost, Mara, it was almost laughable how similar this proceeding was to the last one. Like, it was very similar arguments, and thus we were able to make stronger and more well thought out arguments because of that past experience. The code didn't change. It's not like they changed the code and thus made it so that, the kids can be on the bus longer. It was still illegal then. It was still illegal now.
Could you talk a little bit more about like how you fought back? Like what did you and the LSIC do in order to stop the closure threat right now?
Yeah, so as soon as he gave us that verbal information about possible closure, we rallied immediately and had an official local school improvement council meeting within the school building, and we elected a board, and we kept minutes and kept it very above board, so that then we could have not only documentation, but also an official capacity that if legally we needed to rely on this entity, this local school improvement council, we could. And I think that that is still a brilliant idea that we may need to leverage in the future. So we had it as a back pocket type thing. And then after that, we would meet periodically. Each of us, we created subcommittees, and we identified areas where we could argue against closure. And so one we knew was going to be the busing. And so there was a subcommittee with including my father again and two other representatives, including the previous director of transportation
For the
for
county.
Randolph County. That previous director of transportation identified our route for us, identified the length and what the shortest route to the new school that we'd be consolidated into would be, and even quasi testified on our behalf at a board meeting. Why don't you go into our strategy of once we got that impact statement from him, our strategy was to go to the board every few weeks.
Well, I mean, I can't stress enough that the difference this time around from when we started was just resources, people, and having people that had different specialties, experiences, knowledge was huge because you have people that, their job was inspecting mines and, environmental factors, and those, capabilities came into play for like the transportation side, or people who had financial, abilities that came into play when we looked at the finances. But to continue what you were saying, there was a bus transportation subcommittee. There was then also a finance committee, and that committee worked in two ways. One was having a third party sort of do an assessment of the budget for the previous and incoming year to compare their third party analysis of what Pickens costs to run and what it would be savings wise for the county should it close.
And
And
this is,
then,
you mentioned that the superintendent had produced an impact statement that
correct.
outlined what sort of the forecasted savings, I'll put that in quotes, savings of closing Pickens would be. And so it sounds like you took that, and then some of your budget folks were doing the analysis of like, are those numbers actually accurate?
Correct. Yeah. And I will say the impact statement the superintendent put together had many issues. Like there were many elements that were not true. And whether those were errors made because he had to move quickly or intentional or something else, we don't know. But that gave us confidence, let's say, to really look at the minutiae as best as we could in a detailed fashion, because we felt strongly that, okay, if there are these errors that we can see already, who knows what other errors were made. And in the process, so again, we had a third party look at it, but then we also decided to work with the finance director at the county level. And so a few of us worked with him. And so we thought that that would give us strength when we made any sort of arguments to say, hey, look, these are the numbers from yourself. This isn't just a third party, or it's just us with our own intentions that are, certainly biased. We're doing this together. And on both fronts, we found, which I think is very strong, that if they were to close Pickens, they would have lost money. So both the third party and our work with the finance director found that. And even We even got an email from the finance director saying, correct. Yes, you are correct. Looking at the numbers, this would be true. And so we were ready to go to our hearing and say, hey, like your finance director who's right here, like we didn't want to antagonize, but say, looking at the budget within your own director and team, you're going to lose money closing Pickens School.
Well, and sadly, the impact statement, like Jonathan said, had so many errors that even the financial director admitted that there were mistakes in that impact statement, which would have gone on to the state level for closure proceedings, had errors and like coded a whole teacher, a very expensive whole teacher to Pickens School that did not exist. So that demonstrates to you again, like how much of a burden it was on us to, first of all, fine-tooth comb and identify very hard to read information, financial data that we had to beg for, quite honestly, and then demonstrate to them like, wait, do you admit that this position doesn't even exist? And do you admit that these costs are not as high as you're saying they are for Pickens School? And yes, they would. And so it was a huge burden on us, but it was impactful. But it makes me again question how much of that is happening all the time across every county and every school.
Well, and our finance system is run on this antiquated MS-DOS kind of software. And even the finance director himself says it's not great and wishes for something new, and that the state has mentioned, purchasing a new software license for them, but hasn't done it. And so I do think that's a factor as well. He and his team have to go by hand and pull paper portfolios of money. It's not a very It's not like
It's
QuickBooks,
not
like run a
user-friendly.
report. It's
They haven't figured out how to use AI in this
yeah, right.
specific thing where it would be helpful. Like
Yeah.
it's
But to continue, there's the bus subcommittee, finance subcommittee, there was an education subcommittee, and that committee looked at both how Pickens performs on education in comparison to state, because it is one of the highest performing schools in the county and top caliber for the state, as well as the programs offered and those types of things. And then there was also a focus, and it really wasn't a subcommittee, we just sort of did, but like the culture of the community, focusing on some of the historical, things that were on the historical registry, and like tourism, both in the state and the county, really focus on our area. So some of those aspects to help round out our argument.
I want to bring up why we chose those subcommittees. And I think one thing that was very helpful in choosing them was we had the impact statement to kind of direct it. So we felt we would respond directly to an impact statement saying, you're up for closure. These are the reasons why, with our own impact statement against closure, and base those subcommittees off of why what categories the Dr. Dilley, our superintendent, had identified for closure.
So
And
basically, you're
so,
taking his argument and
yes.
kind of systematically going
Attack.
back through it. And so I
Yes.
think this is, I just want to highlight this because I think sometimes we make the mistake when we're fighting back, like they're using an economic argument or efficiency argument. And so we argue on the, well, here's the community value of the school. But what y'all did was you actually took their argument and sort of argued against it, but in the language that they were using, or in the using the same metrics, the same framework as they were. So you can't, it's not just an efficiency against community or educational value, you're actually meeting them where they're at, which I think is much more persuasive for different kinds of stakeholders.
Very much. And it allowed us to create a structure that they already had defined for us. And so we had these guardrails of where they were going. So if they made an argument outside of that structure, then we'd be like, well, wait a minute, you didn't make that argument. And we've already addressed these things, which is a part. Think of it like a lawsuit. If you're suing me for a breach of contract, you're not talking to me about, some other crime. You're talking about that breach. So we stayed within those parameters and argued every single thing one to one as best we could. And the subcommittees made it easier. Now, some of us ended up participating on all the subcommittees because it was so few of us. And I will urge you to bring in as many people as you can, especially professionals or folks who have first passion and second skill sets within those parameters, because that will make a huge difference. And then the writing of your own impact statement or the arguments for or against it, for against closure, will be helpful. But
Want
in addition, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, just about the budget piece. I remember y'all talking about how not only were you just disputing the numbers that they provided, or like in terms of cost savings, but you also really got down in the weeds, for where you looked at sort of what statute was around like minimum classroom sizes, for example. And you looked at some of the assumptions they had built into their models, and you were able to identify places where they were like, saying, oh, this would be a savings because we'd be able to just take these kids and put them in this classroom. But you were looking at, oh, no, actually, you need to have for, a K-5 classroom, you need to have at least this amount of classroom square footage. So this would then require upgrades to your current buildings or whatever. And so that would be an additional cost that you did not factor into the model.
Correct.
Like one thing that really stuck out to me is you were looking at the places where the assumptions were wrong, and there would be hidden costs in closure that were just were not even taken into account in terms of that the superintendent's impact statement. Is that right?
It is correct, and it's a huge oversight on his part because it is going to bring a lot more cost to his county in the end, and it breaks laws. Like, literally, there are codes within building the SBA, what does that stand for? Business
Building
Building Authority,
facility.
School Building Authority has very specific codes and rules about a kindergarten class versus a fifth grade class. So it's very important that you And while it's very difficult to read some of those, that you do become aware with, of like what are the violations that he or she may be violating in order to close your school and put you into a more crowded school.
I'll say one thing that would have helped us, and we tried to get but couldn't, was an attorney that was focused on education law in the state, because all of the education attorneys in our state work for the Board of Education at the state level. We're a small state, there aren't many, and so we literally couldn't find a single one that wouldn't be breaching a contract by helping us in some way. So that.
Which I think is going to be a common problem in rural America generally. I think there's going to be a lot of that issue. And so that's why I believe you would have to come at this a little bit differently and have and maybe you can't get an attorney. You have to go more of a national attorney rather than a local attorney. We did have an attorney on our first closure proceedings that volunteered their time and helped us. And so that a lot of the work that that person had done was very helpful to this argument because while we don't have a legal background, we were able to utilize some of that research. And again, it had not changed, so we were able to duplicate some of the analysis that they had done.
So I know that we're almost at time. Just a couple like last questions. Another thing that I noticed was that y'all were able to pull in research, but then still make a very localized argument. And you really, I think, use the research in service of your own very local, your local case. And I think that's important because I think a lot of times, it's not like talking heads aren't persuasive. What people want to know about is their own community, and particularly, a superintendent is worried about losing their job, right? If they lose the support of their school board members, and school board members are worried about losing votes. And so, yes, you can use that research, and you should use that research, but really framing it locally so that people understand the very immediate impacts.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point because, if they don't feel the humans behind it, then it's just numbers and it's not as meaningful. And so one strategy we also included was we would go to every single Board of Education meeting and make sure we were there and that we got on the agenda at the beginning of the meeting to make some kind of point on why closure was a bad choice. And those were students, community members, LSIC board members,
Legislators.
legislators, teachers, things like that. And so each time we would either prepare a vetted speech or someone would be like, hey, I'm going to speak to this. Does this sound good to our local school improvement council? And we like, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that. So this was a way to slowly demonstrate that it's a human issue, that it's local, and that these are the faces you're impacting, right? And also bring out some of the arguments slowly throughout time to make sure your board is not just in a vacuum. A lot of times these board members are not allowed to A, talk about or meet about this problem outside of board meetings, and they're being bombarded with extremes, like one side really wanting closure and one side really not wanting closure. So it was good to have a contact and let them see us throughout those meetings and demonstrate we cared about all the issues they're dealing with. And then also, sometimes we would hear about other things that they were struggling with, and that informed our arguments. So, yeah, you're right. You got to make it hyper local in a way and yet universal. It's a very difficult balance.
So, would you just give like any last words of advice for folks that are maybe facing this in their own community?
I think the things that come to mind for me are gather as many willing, passionate people together as possible and balance between a hyper focus on fact, and that, so like we did responding to their arguments with facts and details that are simple and easy to speak to. And then also, like Clara was saying earlier, bring as much humanity to it as possible with kindness and care, because we've seen in other closure proceedings a lot of antagonism, and that tends to actually hurt the school potentially being closed, because it's easier to say, oh, well, there's a lack of respect, or there's whatever they would want to say on the board side, to then vote for closure. it's ammunition for them essentially to do that. And I hate to use that term, but so yeah, I think fact-based points that are simple and clear and humanizing in a kind way your presence as a community member rather than an obstacle, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think these board members, you have to remember, they're the ones that are going to choose, not the superintendent. You are not arguing with your superintendent to prevent closure. You are trying to sway your board members. So think of them as like a jury. And a jury doesn't want to be told that they are the problem, right? They want to be given facts and information and shown a path forward and why the path that that Dr. Dilley or your superintendent is suggesting is wrong, illegal, immoral, and why there may be other opportunities and alternatives that you're willing to put skin in the game for, which we were. We were very and have been and continue to be very willing to try to find solutions for our school, knowing that yes, it is a burden on the county, but it is necessary and it is in a constitutionally a right for us. So we're very hopeful. I think that if you meet often and regularly as a group and try to build out strategies and think carefully about those strategies rather than just running to one direction, you'll find that that's more meaningful. But you do have to start early enough to build the strategies out fully. And it's hard. It's hard work. And I'm sorry that we're going through this.
I do think the more inclusive your community body is, like the group of people that you're working with, likely the more persuasive and diverse of an argument you're going to have when it goes to the board.
Agreed.
So it can be easy to find like-minded people in the community, and that's your group. I would argue the more diversity you have from your community, from every, aspect of that word, the better your, sort of argumentation and perspective will be from the board.
Yeah, I'll say that there's a concrete example of this. For example, our LSIC board meetings were open to the public, and there were some folks there that normally don't participate in anything on a community level, but they came for this, and this particular individual brought up something about the state road cleaning and clearing of snow, and how they don't even open until a certain time. And so thus the bus route that they were going to have to create would be going before the state road had even begun. So this is a great example of where you create an openness to this. Yes, we have to be careful who shows up at our meetings because it is strategy, but you want it to be open enough that you get people like that who have brilliant ideas that are you can add to your argument.
We could go forever. Like I have another thought, but I'll stop for now and
Thank you so much. I think that last point was particularly important. You sort of need that big tent to be able to get the diversity of viewpoints and make the most persuasive argument as possible. And so, just to kind of round things out, so y'all were able to get stop the closure. You actually never even got to present your side because they canceled the proceedings entirely. I know that closure might continue to be a threat in the future, but for now, we've got to win. So, thank you both for sharing so much.